The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has an incredible business. He buys really cheap properties, like I'm talking $500 or $1,000 properties. He fixes them up and he rents them out. And what's great about his business is that he's making really good cash flow every month, but when he fixes the properties up, he's also creating a lot of equity in these properties. Now, the problem that a lot of investors have with really cheap properties like this is a lot of times they look great on paper, but in reality, they don't make the kind of returns that they were hoping to make. My guest today is really making those returns. He's been at this for a long time. He's really got it figured out, and today he's going to share with us where he finds the properties and how he manages the properties and how he makes sure that his properties remain profitable. Joining us on the show today from Kansas City is Larry Meyer. Larry is a longtime friend of the show. He's been with us a couple of times in the past. So let's take a real quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll catch up with Larry. When I'm doing research to buy a new rental property, there's a lot of different websites, apps, and then a spreadsheet that I use to do my analysis. It's really kind of a convoluted process. Well, there's a much easier way. There's an app called Ask Rick. That's R-I-C for Rental Income Calculator. Ask Rick makes it really easy to find and analyze rental properties. You can see all the properties for sale in an area. If something looks good, you can press one button. It'll analyze the property for you. It'll figure out the rent amount. It'll figure out your mortgage payment, all your expenses, and give you your cash flow. If you're ready to move forward, you can make an offer right there on the app, or you can send the information over to your realtor to do some more investigation into the property. You can try it out for free right now. Just search for Ask Rick. That's R-I-C, Ask Rick in the App Store, or go to justaskrick.com. That's justaskrick.com. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified. And I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Larry, the numbers that you're working with on your rental properties almost sound too good to be true, and I feel like it would be helpful for everybody to put into perspective exactly what you're doing. So why don't we start things off with looking at one of your most recent deals? Can you tell me how much you paid for the property?
My world is a little different than most folks. I chase after the worst properties I can find, and I usually find them with the Kansas City, Missouri Land Bank. And a land bank is where houses basically go to die when they're not picked up at a tax sale. That nobody wants them because they're in such disrepair, then the city hangs on to them and then they just wait to be till they fall apart or burn down or whatever. Well, I go in and I buy those, and I'm buying them for anywhere from $500 to $1,000. With land bank properties, it's illegal for me to turn around and flip them. They won't let me do that, so they have to be completed. So I go in and I complete every one of them. I'm not paying very much, but there's an awful lot of work to be done on them. After everything's said and done, I'm into them between $35,000 and $40,000, and after repair value on these are pretty much $65,000 to $70,000 after repair value. Wow. And rental income between $700 and $800 a month.
That's really, really incredible. Now, is it hard to find those land bank properties? Are there a lot of them? Like, if you decided today you wanted to buy one, Could you buy it, or is it just a couple of times a year when the city sells off properties?
No, once the tax sale happens in September, I believe, every year, then by March of the following year, whatever's left over and nobody buys, they're transferred over to the city of, in our case, city of Kansas City, Missouri. Every city has a land bank. And then they just sit and they wait.
Okay.
And so they're there. They're actively trying to market those. And I'm not the only guy in town that does this, but I probably do more than most. And they are not for the faint of heart. They're difficult rehabs because they're all very distressed. I mean, sometimes we have to cut the entire top of the roof off and re-rafter and redeck and re-roof. And they have title issues. I mean, it's you know, when you know what you're doing, they go pretty smooth.
Right. But you're putting some work into it. Absolutely. But when you're getting a really good return on the rental, and then you've also created a ton of equity once the property is fixed up. Now, what's the neighborhood like that your properties are generally in?
These are urban core Kansas City, Missouri, and they're no better or worse. There really isn't a bad part of town here. We just don't have that. There are streets that, you know, you might want to stay off of for various reasons. But what we try to do is we try to go in and buy as many on the block as we can. And land bank is one source. Some of them are abandoned. Some of them are not wanted anymore by landlords, out-of-state landlords that just gave up because of bad management. So there's lots of sources for these. But the neighborhoods are usually these are the problems. Mm-hmm. Vacant houses, you get squatters, you get crime going on in there. And once you get in, these are usually the problems. Once you clean it up, then that really gets the block straightened down.
That's interesting that you're really turning around the whole block, that you're buying properties, multiple properties nearby, and hopefully improving the neighborhood. And that only benefits you because now the neighborhood's better and you're probably able to attract a better tenant too.
Of course. And what we found is once we start, this is the ugly duckling that's been sitting there for years, sometimes, you know, 7, 8, 9 years, you know, in some cases. And once we start fixing up ours, well, all of a sudden you see the neighbor's out trimming his bushes and the guy two doors down, he's actually painting his house. So, you know, it kind of gets everybody lathered up to, I guess we got a nice neighborhood now. Let's get everything.
That's sold. Awesome.
And it happens. And then new investment comes in. So it kind of spurs other development.
So what would you say? Like, is this like a C-class neighborhood, B-class neighborhood? Like what kind of grade would you give it?
Oh, these are definitely C properties.
C, okay.
These are C properties.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything, but, you know, once the houses are fixed up and if you're screening properly, I've been doing this for 36 years, and you can probably count on your thumbs the amount of real problems I've had down there. So, you know, it's no different than anywhere else.
It's awesome. So are your tenants, do you do Section 8 or are they regular cash paying tenants?
I do some Section 8, not through the Kansas City, Missouri Housing Authority. I've just not had very good luck with them. But there's other programs out there. There's other housing authorities with surrounding cities that we get access to. There are other agencies that have Section 8 based rental assistance. Sometimes they'll ask you to pay the utilities in a house, which takes your $700 rent payment up to $1,200 or $1,300. But that includes the utilities. So you come out about the same. So there's lots of options. There's also a lot of open market folks that I've had real good luck with. We just finished a house where a gentleman works as he's a driver for Federal Express, late 20s, single guy, loves the house. He'll probably end up buying it from me in a few years.
Now, one thing that really strikes me about your business is just how successful you've been. I mean, you've been at this for a long time. You do a really good job with your tenants. Like, are you from the area that you invest in? Like, what do you think the key to your success has been?
Well, no, I grew up, you know, clear on the other side of town, you know, in suburban Kansas City.
Okay.
And I had someone introduce me to buying houses down there in 1985. I just met him one day, and just started telling me. But it's kind of a common sense approach that, you know, these are just regular folks like anybody else. They just don't make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I found that if, you know, you, like anywhere else, you treat people the way you want to be treated, then, you know, you don't have any problems. So, you know, and sometimes you get a jerk that, you know, that wants to be a jerk, and okay, so be it. But most of the time, I rarely, if ever, do I have any problems. I've never had a tenant when they stop paying rent. I've never had anybody destroy my house because they were mad at me. It's just, I've never had that happen before. So, you know, you just got to treat people the way you want to be treated. And usually you get along just fine.
Do you think a big part of that is the screening that you do? Because I know you're really good at screening. Do you think that's a big part of it, that you're weeding out the jerks before they rent from you?
Oh, of course. That's the whole, that's the most important part of the whole picture is screening.
So let's talk about what you're doing, because it sounds like, you know, these are lower income people. They probably, I'm assuming, don't have the best credit score. So what are you looking for? Like, to look beyond the credit score to see, like, what kind of clues are you looking for to see if someone's going to be a good tenant?
Well, I don't pull credit because I don't really care how they treat MasterCard or St. Luke's Hospital. Mm-hmm. What I look for is rental history, because a lot of these folks will pay their rent before they pay anything else. And that's what I'm looking for. As long as I'm in first place, then, you know, yippee, yippee. So I look at rental history from their last landlord and try to get it from, you know, from at least the other guy, the last guy before that. They need to get the utilities on in their own name. That's a big thing. And then, if they've ever been evicted for non-payment of rent, that's, another, gatekeeper. And then I look at criminal issues. I mean, do you have criminal issues? And I look for violent felonies. I mean, obviously, you know, guns, weapons, violent drug activities, things like that, then I'm probably going to pass on you.
Now, with the utilities, getting utilities turned on in their name, like, how are you telling if that's going to be a problem? Like, are you looking for a collection from the utility company, or like, how do you know if that's going to be an issue?
Well, I tell them up front. You know, they'll ask me, well, what are you looking for? And that's because they'll always say, well, my credit's not very good. And I'll go through exactly what I just said. But then the other gatekeeper is that I'll tell them, I said, you've got to be able to get the utilities on in your own name. Will that be a problem? And, you know, they'll, you know, well, I owe the water department, whatever. I said, well, then this is probably not going to be for you.
Okay.
If they tell me yes, then we move on.
So they know, like, if they're going to have problems with the utility company, that they know. I mean, so it's just a matter of letting them know that they need to tell you up front if this is going to be an issue.
Right. Because when I take the application, and the application, is approved, then a deposit's paid, which is non-refundable. And it says right on the receipt, non-refundable deposit. And that holds the house until move-in day. And if we get 2 days before move-in day and they tell me that they need a new lease with their three-year-old son's name on it so they can give it to the gas company, then sorry, you just lost your deposit.
Yeah.
And I move on with the next guy.
Now, the other thing that I think is really interesting, and I don't think this has come up on the show before, is that you kind of mitigate your risk by not signing a 1 year lease with the tenants, that you go month to month to almost give them a trial period. Talk me through how that works.
Well, on a normal lease, most leases, residential, are 12 months. But I don't do that because, the only way you can break a lease for 12 months is if they don't pay their rent. Well, what happens if they pay their rent every month, but there's a new boyfriend that moves in and he starts causing problems and he's tearing up the house, or you drive by and you find a car on cinder blocks, whatever. It's really difficult to go to court and terminate the lease based on lease provisions that aren't kept. You can do it, but it's just a lot more difficult. So I went ahead and I just do a month-to-month lease that automatically renews at the end of the month. And if I ever have any problems, then you give notice on the last day of the rental period that says that you are aware that your tenancy is month-to-month. Please be advised that I'm terminating your tenancy. You've got 30 days to move out. You don't have to give any reasons why you're terminating. At least you have nothing. You just have to give them a 1 month's notice to vacate. And if they stay beyond that, then you file what's called an unlawful detainer and you throw them out.
That's so great. I really like that. I mean, that's just a really good way to get out of the lease, you know, that you're not locking yourself in for a whole year to right. try them out. Now let's talk about dealing with lower income tenants that there's, so when someone's a lower income tenant, they obviously don't have a lot of money, and with the moving expenses of moving from their old place to the new place, that they might not have the security deposit. So how do you deal with that? Are you firm with them that before you move in, I need you to give me a full security deposit? Or if someone seems good, but maybe they don't have the money, will you work with them on that?
Yeah, if this is someone that I really like, application is strong, good rental history. You know, I mean, think about it. When you're charging $700 a month for rent, and the deposit is usually the same as 1 month's rent, so they're going to have to come up with $1,400 plus, you know, transfer their utilities, plus, you know, find somebody to move them. You know, they could have to come up with, you know, $1,500 to a couple thousand dollars. And for that, that's an ordeal. So I have no problem breaking out the deposit over 2 months. And sometimes I'll go three, especially if it's an old, and I, you know, especially if it's an older tenant, maybe on a fixed income, then, you know, obviously that's what I'll do. And I'll make the rents always due on the first. And then maybe on their second paycheck on the 15th or the end of the month, they'll give me another portion of the deposit, and I break it out, and it's easy for them. You want to set something up so it's successful. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to get in, make such stringent rules, and then it just doesn't work.
Have you ever gotten burned on that, where they just haven't worked out, they've trashed the property before they've paid you the full deposit, and you've had nothing?
It has happened. Yeah. Most definitely. It, you know, it's happened. It doesn't happen very often. Sometimes it does. You know, things happen in their world down there where they lose jobs. They get hurt. They're in a car crash. They move out of town. So things happen.
What about late fees? If someone is a really good tenant and maybe something happened, you know, they ran into some car problems or some off the wall thing and they don't have the full rent, do you really enforce those late fees so that you let them know, look, I'm not messing around. Rent's due on the first. If you don't have it, you need to pay the late fee. Or will you work with them because you understand these are low income tenants and things happen?
Well, you have to take you have set rules. You've got a lease, and you let them know up front that the lease is what governs the world. But then there's also reality, and reality is if they're a good tenant and they pay their bills every month and they take care of the house, something's going to happen along the way. Brakes go out, Uncle Bob's in jail, something's going to happen.
Sure.
And if it's just a one-shot, one-off thing, then, you know, that's fine. Pay me when you can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then what about if the tenant causes damage to the house? Like maybe their kids break a window, you know, something that it's going to be their responsibility to pay for it. Well, do you ever work with them on that? Or are you firm that, look, you did damage to the house, you need to pay for this?
Well, there's no question. If damage is caused by the house and it's not, you know, by anything that we did, then, of course, I mean, I send a guy out. I don't gouge him. And, you know, whatever the guy costs to go out and fix it, plus the bill from Home Depot. And they're sent the invoice. I sent him a copy of the Home Depot bill. And I said, this is your bill. You can pay me out over 2 or 3 months. I said, but you're going to have to pay for this. I said, you know, end of story. So, and if it's a regular occurrence, you know, then we've got other things to talk about. But, you know, things happen.
Okay. All right. And the last thing I want to ask you about is with appliances. So we had someone on the show a few months ago. They were actually from Kansas City And he was saying that he buys used appliances because it's just cheaper. If, say, you know, just to make up some numbers, if he's going to buy a new refrigerator and it's going to cost $1,000 for the refrigerator, he'd rather buy a used refrigerator for $100. And even if it's only going to last 1 year, he'd rather spend $100 every year to buy a refrigerator because he's paying for the repairs slowly over time. What do you think about that? What's your opinion? Do you like the idea of used appliances, or would you rather just buy something new and then not have to worry about it for a long time?
I like to do things once and not have to worry about it, because when a refrigerator goes out, and it's never at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, it's always 4th of July weekend at 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. when they just bought $600 yep. worth of meat and they're going to want you to pay for it. That never works. I want to be able to put a new refrigerator in and be done with it. And I, you know, I've got a copy of the serial number. I've got a hot copy of the receipt that I bought it from Best Buy. So if they run off with it, I've got the serial number, and you move on, but that, it just doesn't work. It's not worth it. They get really upset when their other food spoils and it's hard for them to replace it.
Yeah.
They get really upset when they have to wait a day or 2 days for a new one to be delivered. So it's just not worth it.
Yeah. I agree with you 100% on that. I would rather, and I do, just pay the money to buy the new refrigerator and then not think about it, not worry about it for a long time. Well, Larry, it's always great having you on the show. I love talking to you. You've always got such great information to share.
Somebody helped me out and got me going in this. So it's my turn to, you know, help somebody else.
That's great, Larry. You're always so helpful to our audience. Do you sell turnkey properties too? If someone was looking to come in and buy a property that's fully rehabbed and ready to go?
Oh, sure. We have lots of properties. In fact, that's what I was out doing this morning. I had an out-of-town investor in looking for finished product. We've got houses that are finished that have tenants in them that are available. We've got houses that we haven't started yet that we can finish. We've got houses that are halfway through that got shut down because of the COVID virus where we had to send everybody home. So anything and everything. So a little something for everyone. So yeah, we've got lots of properties, and there's more that I haven't done any buying this year at all. So there's houses that are just waiting for me.
If you want to reach out to Larry, I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 268. I'd like to thank today's sponsor for making this episode possible. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. If you're looking to buy a rental property, whether you're just getting started or you want to add to your portfolio, the lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge. She's a nationwide lender, and she specializes in helping investors buy rental properties. She can also help you with a refi. The rates are super low right now, and this is a great time to reach out to Chaley and see if she can save you some money and lower that mortgage payment. If you want to find out more or set up a time to talk to Chaley, just go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's RIDGE, lendinggroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If this is your first time here, make sure you subscribe. We've got new interviews every single Tuesday. If you subscribe, you'll get notified as soon as they come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new Caramel Chocolate Cold Brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.